And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, a very sultry-sounding Aaron Varola.
Hey, folks, what's going on? Sorry for the cold, but welcome to episode 77?
Yep.
Yeah, all right, 77 of the Fanboy Garage. Always a pleasure to have you guys with us. It's a regularly scheduled program for you guys. I know we've had a couple of weeks with some special guests, the folks from the Super Civil Servants podcast, as well as Rick Shue from Batman on Film and Justin Kowalski of Let's Go. So it's just Chris and I today, but we've got lots to discuss. But we'll kick it off with the box office as per usual.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, you know, Star Wars Rise of Skywalker is the story kind of this week. It's not the only story, but it's the story in the sense that, you know, it was number one again, $34.5 million domestic. Right now, it is sitting at, as we record this on Tuesday, January 7th, it is sitting at $927.5 million worldwide. So it's going to get to $1 billion. For me, the question of this, and we talked about it a little bit last episode, is, you know, just how far over $1 billion does this movie get? And I see, to me, I think that's significant.
How far along ago?
Well, yeah, it's significant from a pure box office analysis standpoint, because we don't have to get into success versus, you know, not success, because then you're starting to get into that whole conversation of success and failure versus something that maybe just doesn't meet expectations. Because I'll be honest with you, I don't know what this will be. So if this movie barely creeps over the $1 billion mark, I don't think we can say, well, it's guaranteed to be a success because it did over $1 billion, or it did $1 billion. Because I've read that the reported budget for this thing is upwards of $375 million. Damn. And that's not even including marketing and everything like that. So, it's very possible, if that's true, that, you know, with theater splits and everything else, that, you know, $1 billion may not actually be a money-making venture for this film.
Wow.
I don't have, without knowing for sure that that's the budget, without knowing for sure what the marketing costs are, it's all just kind of guesstimating and whatnot, and we don't ultimately know where this thing is going to finish. But just for today's conversation, if it does a little over $1 billion, I don't know that we could automatically say, yep, success did $1 billion, because it's relative, right?
Yeah.
I mean, success when it comes to the box office, that's what makes box office conversation so fascinating, is that it's all relative. It's relative to the budget. I don't know. It's weird because, you know, forget about expectations for a second. You know, I was expecting this movie to do $1.5 billion at least.
Yeah, I thought it would have captured something closer to The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Not the $2 billion. I mean, that's a huge feat. Right. And I didn't expect it to kind of do that.
Sure.
But, yeah.
But
yeah,
more than The Last Jedi.
Five. Yeah. Or even, upwards of $1.4 billion, $1.3 billion. Which is The Last Jedi territory, which is not bad.
Or even $1.5 billion. You know, $1.5 billion gave it a slight bump because it is the final, part. And this movie is fascinating as far as the performance goes, because very little about this movie, as far as the fan metrics and the popularity metrics, make any sense. Forget the critics for a second, right? But just because that's a whatever. We put that aside because it doesn't really have much to do with this, I don't think. But if you look at the popularity metrics, so it's 86% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, which is good, right? It's right around where The Force Awakens was. And even if you take away all the bogus Last Jedi fan reviews, right, and all that stuff, it still would have, it's most likely going to, would have been significantly higher than The Last Jedi's audience score. But then it does a B+ cinema score, which is the lowest cinema score in the history of Star Wars,
right?
And but what does any of that mean, right? So what do we do with any of that stuff? But then look at the box office now. So this movie clearly opened well below The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, and it has not had any stronger legs than either of those movies, right?
Right.
So it's like, so then what does that mean? So that is the ultimate popularity metrics, right? Is the, you know, the amount of people that actually go see the movie, especially after the first weekend. So, like, the one, now again, unless you're going to say, well, it did $1 billion, but, you know, the movie made $175 million opening weekend. And, you know, this is now going to be the lowest, by far, the lowest movie in this trilogy. I don't know. It's really, really weird because, like, yeah, that audience score for Rotten Tomatoes, you would assume you would have people that were not happy with The Last Jedi that you would think would flock to this movie, right?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny because I was thinking about this and it's interesting because, and this could be just the way you comment on Twitter, the things that you like on Twitter, but like I see more people now championing The Last Jedi than I have in a long time. And that's very, very bizarre to me because I felt like I was living in the realm of like having to defend this movie 24/7.
Yeah.
But since The Rise of Skywalker, it just seems like a lot more people have kind of come out and been like, yeah, this, you know, I didn't like this. Or, and again, it's, I think it's the algorithms to Twitter.
It's very possible, sure,
that are doing that. But I think it's interesting because, you know, could one say that the cinema score actually has some sort of credibility in relation to its impact in the box office? I'm interested to be reminded what the cinema score was for Solo to kind of break that theory, because if it was an A.
Well, I know that they said that the B+ was the lowest cinema score in the history of Star Wars, so obviously that would include Solo.
Okay, so then it doesn't matter.
Well, no,
it's kind of, you know, what kind of correlations can we build?
It got an A-.
Yeah, all right, well, but still.
Yeah, I mean
that movie grossly underperformed.
Yes, the thing is, again, CinemaScore really is a better, it's really there to gauge how well the marketing for the movie went. That's really what it's gauging, right? I mean, it may not say that, and it doesn't really, you know, that's not what they advertise it as, but ultimately they're really looking to, because that's why they're only focusing on that audience, that opening night audience. They're right, trying,
like,
to gauge.
Did it deliver?
Yeah, had it, right. So I do think it has an effect to a point. I mean, it didn't have an effect on Joker, right?
No.
I mean, Joker got a B+, didn't it?
Yeah. Actually, that I am reminded, but yes, I believe it was a B+.
You know, so I...
But that's interesting.
Yeah, it got a B+ cinema score, and it overperformed.
It's the feeling that the audience is left with when they leave, right? Because they interview or survey people after they've seen the film, right?
Correct. So yeah. It's like an exit poll.
Yeah.
Basically.
So it's funny because Joker is a great example of this, but like I showed that to my wife and she was like, "Ooh, I like gotta go take a shower," because it leaves you with something. You know what I mean? Like it's an uncomfortable feeling. And that feeling is associated with something related to Star Wars, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, okay, it's fine. Yeah, it's
right. Well, it's
Joker's
why,
like one of those. Is like, ooh, like, how do I feel about this?
It's also why like horror movies tend to not do well with CinemaScore, even ones that are successful, because I think there's that immediate
left with that feeling. Yeah, of, like, exactly. Creepiness, yep. Or like, I don't really know if I really like the film.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's more emotional versus like critical.
Yes, absolutely. They haven't given you time to process or think.
Right.
You're just giving your immediate like gut reaction to it. Right. And you might have, even if it could very well be like, so just for example, I know a few people that I've spoken to since that felt like I did, that kiss, right, at the end of The Rise of Skywalker was completely unearned and just bad. So now if I actually was talking to somebody today that said that the person they saw it with walked out of the theater right after that.
Oh, God.
Like, and they're a huge Star Wars fan, and they were just like, no. Like,
oh,
no.
Shit.
So, like, that person would not have filled out a very good CinemaScore card, regardless of what they thought of the rest of the movie, right? Because that's what you're really gauging, is that very end, you know, the immediate reaction you get at that point. So, yeah, I mean, I think that there's something to all of this, but it is interesting, and I haven't experienced as much as you have as far as, like, seeing people saying, well, oh, you know what, maybe The Last Jedi wasn't really that bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, I did see, and I'm apologize because I don't remember who it was. And maybe you do, because I think it was one of the threads that you were, like, very involved in.
Sure.
Or maybe it wasn't, but I don't know. But someone on Twitter posted something I thought was brilliant when comparing, like, the Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker. And they were saying how, like, or even The Force Awakens, too, like, they felt like that The Last Jedi was... it wasn't trying to be a Star Wars movie. It just was Star Wars. But The Rise of Skywalker, it feels like it's just people trying to make a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
And I thought that was brilliant. And
yeah, I saw that tweet. Shit, I don't remember who it was.
I don't either, and I'm sorry for that. But whoever it was just a fantastic tweet. And I was going to save it, and I didn't, I don't think. But yeah, I mean, I think that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, J.J. Abrams does have that in him sometimes. I mean, we saw it in Star Trek Into Darkness in that final act of that movie, where he then decided to start making a Star Trek film rather than just make a film that is Star Trek. But, but anyway, so we'll see. I mean, you know, it's interesting. I was looking at the box office for... this year, well, for 2019, rather, right? The worldwide box office numbers. And of course, it's all, you know, Disney for the most part. Because your top 10 was Avengers Endgame, The Lion King, as of the end of the year, Frozen 2, Spider-Man Far From Home, Captain Marvel, Toy Story 4. And then you had Joker, which breaks that up. And then then you have Aladdin and Star Wars, Rise of Skywalker. And then Hobbs and Shaw was 10. So, like, 8 of the top 10 were Disney films. But, bananas. Which is whatever. I mean, they own everything.
Well, technically, Spider-Man Far From Home is not.
Well, right. That's a Sony thing. But you know what I mean. But either way, I guess where I'm going with this is, right now, Rise of Skywalker is just about $200 million worldwide behind Captain Marvel.
Oh,
and do we think that this movie has another $200 million in it worldwide? And I say that.
I don't know.
I say that because could you imagine if I had told you 6 months ago or even 2 months ago that The Rise of Skywalker might not make as much money worldwide as Captain Marvel, would you have ever spoken to me again or believed me?
Or less than Frozen 2.
Well, Frozen 2 is 1.3. I mean, that's been a phenomenon.
That's what I'm saying.
But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, less than Captain Marvel? Absolutely not.
Frozen 2 is going to make more than The Last Jedi worldwide by the time it's done.
Yeah, that's... So here's the thing. Do I think it has another $200 million worldwide? Maybe. There's literally nothing significant coming out in the next couple of weeks from a release perspective that I think could challenge it. And I think what we're going to get... are a lot of people who are going to, kind of go back and see the film again. I don't know. $200 million is a lot of money. I didn't think Joker had it in it.
Well, it's a lot of money when you think about, like, the majority of it is made by, you know, early on, right?
Sure.
And there's no China. I mean, Star Wars is not China is not a market for Star Wars. I mean, there is China, but they don't do big numbers in China.
Right. And then, you know, there's no Rose Tico, so...
yeah.
There goes your character. Which I remember Rogue One's marketing was like, yeah, that's the whole reason why they cast Donnie Yen, was to kind of like go, hey, look, we've got some like really good Chinese actors here. Don't you like Star Wars now?
Yeah.
That would be saying something if it made less than Rogue One. And Rogue One is a great film.
Yes, it is.
A great, great
movie. And it's a movie that movie overperformed, right, based on expectations. Yeah. So that's a case of like a movie that I don't think anybody expected that to do over $1 billion. I mean, it rode the wave of The Force Awakens. It was the first Star Wars anything after The Force Awakens, sure. right? So you still had a lot of that. And, of course, as we've said a million times, that marketing with the Vader stuff was just perfect, right? Spot on.
You know, the one thing I'll say about the box office performance for Rise of Skywalker is I don't want it to be one of those things like, you see, The Last Jedi totally killed Star Wars. Like, this movie's way superior than The Last Jedi, and it should have made more money than it, but The Last Jedi totally killed, you know, its potential.
You know,
because I am sure there will be people that say
that. Oh, I agree. But I don't, I think there will be people that say it. I just don't think it's valid.
No, not at all.
And not just because of the, well, first of all, if The Last Jedi had totally killed Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, not that it would have ever made Solo money.
Right.
But you know, we would be talking about it right now saying like, I don't know, man, maybe it'll get to 800. You know what I mean? Like, it would have been it would have done like half.
And it's only 17 days in.
Yeah. I don't think that. Plus, that's why I can't wrap my head around this, because you would think that people who hated The Last Jedi, right? You would think that if that this would be a movie that was perfect for them, though. Unless they've completely written off Star Wars, which I don't believe for a second.
And it is. Yeah. Which is the funny thing. But then this is the other piece of that. I don't think the people that hate The Last Jedi are as big as we initially thought they were.
You mean as far as the amount of people?
I think the voice, the sure. haters of The Last Jedi
yes.
were just one very, very little squeaky wheel.
It's possible.
You know what I mean? Because if that was the case, you know, you would say, okay, like 60% of the Star Wars fans were like, meh about The Last Jedi, and they would have all flocked, which would have tipped the scales tremendously.
Yeah.
Right? Because then that means that the repeat value of The Last
That's
Jedi
what I'm
wasn't,
saying. Yeah. yeah. So, and I know people, like friends of mine, who legitimately did not like The Last Jedi, right?
Yep.
They were very much in that whole, like, that's not my Luke Skywalker thing. You ruined Luke Skywalker. All of that. They went opening night or opening weekend to see The Rise of Skywalker, and they loved The Rise of Skywalker. So you would think if that was the case, then, like, everybody who didn't like The Last Jedi would go, and this would be, like, a celebration for them, you know, sure. because it could fix whatever, all that stuff. So I think there's more to it than that. I just think that what's happening, and now I've actually started to rethink the thought process behind why The Last Jedi did, you know, much lower than The Force Awakens. Mm. I actually don't even think now that that had to do with all the backlash and the negativity. I just think that we're at a point now where, you know, Force Awakens was such a phenomenon that I actually think that a lot of people just got that stuff out of their system. With The Force Awakens. And it brought in I don't think we've ever been able to get a full gauge of what Star Wars fandom from a box office perspective is like in this generation, because The Force Awakens was an outlier, right?
Yeah.
Like, it set a bar that was not realistic. Now, yeah, you can turn around and say, well, but you know, if you look at the Avengers movies, I mean, Endgame made more than Infinity War. And blah, blah, blah. And there's been an escalation and things like that. Marvel's a whole different animal. Yeah. And in a lot of ways, to a generation of kids today, it's almost like their Star Wars, right? In that sense.
100%. Yeah.
So now I feel like there were people who there clearly were a lot of people that went to see The Force Awakens that didn't bother even with The Last Jedi. And I don't think that that's because of what happened with Luke Skywalker, because they don't even know what happened to Luke Skywalker.
Maybe it's what happened with Han Solo.
You know what I mean? It's because, I think they just felt that they got their Star Wars out of their system. And so maybe the money that Rogue One and maybe the money that Last Jedi made and maybe the money that this movie's making, that is just where Star Wars fandom is right now at the box office. Yeah. Maybe it's hovering around between $1 billion and $1.3-1.4 billion. And, you know, Solo being the other outlier, because that just was whatever. But I've started to rethink the whole thing, and I was actually thinking about it before we came on, and I was like, wow, the oddities of the success or whatever of Rise of Skywalker or its performance have gotten me to rethink even all the stuff about The Last Jedi. And I think we've given way too much credit to the people that were negative on The Last Jedi for its box office performance. And I think that this movie shows that, because if it was true, then all of those people that supposedly didn't go to The Last Jedi because they weren't happy with it, which doesn't even make sense, but they would have flocked to this. You know, all those people who said, oh, The Last Jedi, because I guarantee you every one of the people who saw The Last Jedi and thought that it ruined Star Wars for them absolutely went to see
The Rise of Skywalker. And they walked out of the theater super happy.
Yeah, it's just that.
Matter of fact, a lot of the folks that I know that were like, meh, or like outward, you know, did not like The Last Jedi, have seen like Rise of Skywalker multiple times.
Yeah. And it's just that I think mainstream audiences, like that mainstream crowd, the people that put The Force Awakens over $2 billion, they just have become less and less interested in the Star Wars phenomenon.
I think yes. And I also think that The Force Awakens was the true, you know, love letter to all of Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And More so than maybe The Rise of Skywalker, despite some of the like nudge, wink, wink sort of fan service moments. But it was truly a love letter to Star Wars. And I think the rewatchability of that film is really what pushed it over the edge. It was a cultural phenomenon. The marketing was on point. It was just like perfect in that sense, in terms of like how everything came together, the teases, the welcoming back of the old cast, all of that stuff. And then maybe people were like, oh, this isn't what I wanted. I wanted a story that was focused mainly on, you know, the older characters, and they're clearly taking a backseat. So the rest of these movies can kind of like piss off, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. I just think it's interesting. And just to tie up, because after a while, we are going to have to stop talking about Rise of Skywalker. But just to tie this all up, one other thing, as I was talking to somebody the other day, and they gave a perspective that I, you know, only they could have brought to me, which was that the guy that I was talking to, he's a little older than me, you know, a few years older than me, but essentially we're part of the same generation, right? We grew up on the original trilogy. And so that's his Star Wars, right? And he didn't like the prequel trilogy, right, pretty much at all. I mean, yeah, a couple things he liked, but... And he has been sort of lukewarm at best, no pun intended, on this sequel trilogy, right?
Okay.
Now, his son, who is like, I don't know, maybe 19 or 20 right now, I think 19, he grew up... Sort of the prequel trilogy was his first Star Wars. And he loves that. Like, he loves the prequel. That's his Star Wars. He loves the prequel trilogy. And he liked this sequel trilogy until the end of Rise of Skywalker. Because Kylo Ren was his favorite character, so he did not like the Ben Demption.
Right.
Because he grew up with the prequel trilogy where the bad guy, you know, the guy who's building up to being bad stays, like, he becomes bad, right? So the idea of getting your for him, the redemption wasn't part of his trilogy.
Right.
And then his daughter now, who's like 8 or 9, this is her Star Wars.
This is fascinating.
Yeah, his daughter who's 8 or 9, this is her Star Wars. This sequel trilogy now is the only Star Wars that she knows. She doesn't even care about what came before it.
Right.
And so she loves, and she's in love with Rey. Rey is her favorite character, and she has loved every minute of this sequel trilogy.
Mm.
So I just thought, like, I was like, wow, that's a whole perspective that I haven't been able to get, and it's fascinating. And I think it speaks to the power of Star Wars, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful.
But, yeah. So.
That's great. I mean, it's interesting because I think, you know, I've got a little one, and... You know, I start her where I started, right? And I can see that, you know, there's some interest there. She doesn't necessarily know exactly what's going on. But, you know, when I put on Rey, she's interested in Rey. There's something more to,
yeah,
because she, you know, I don't know exactly what language it is that they're speaking to each other, but like, right. I'm fascinated by like Darth Vader and like Luke Skywalker, and she's like, Rey, who is Rey and what is Rey doing? Yeah. I want the blue lightsaber like Rey. Like, what?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Don't you want the green lightsaber? Don't you want the red one? No, I want the blue one that Rey has. And so, there's a connection there, and I love that. And so that is, you know, what her exposure and sort of continued, you know, visitation to Star Wars or the galaxy far, far away will be. And I'll just deal with the old stuff.
I mean, it's been so long since I've sat down to watch Star Wars without any preconceived notions that right. It's weird to hear, like, it's interesting to hear about other people who have that opportunity. Because yeah. I don't have that. And I think that's why The Mandalorian has resonated so well with pretty much everybody, is because of the fact that you're able to sit there and watch it without those preconceived notions.
Dude, I mean, that has been the thing that I've been championing for so long.
Yeah.
It we have to move forward. Like, and I know I've said a lot about timelines and things like that, but like new characters, people we don't know, things outside of like a galaxy is huge. Why do we keep on going back to the same group of people? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'm that to me is like the lifeblood of Star Wars, is like, let's move past some of that. And I think to me, to kind of bring this back to The Last Jedi, I mean, that's why it succeeds for me, because it is different. It recognized that there were things that needed to shed, and it evolved in a way that I was comfortable with. And I think a lot of people have a problem with how it moved and what it ultimately became. And they wanted to see, you know, they wanted a film that lives more in the nostalgia and kind of looks back on, you know, the things that have come before, the established territory. And that's what the Rise of Skywalker is for a lot of folks.
Yeah. All right. So that'll put a little bow now on the Rise of Skywalker and Star Wars. And, you know, just to finish out some of this box office stuff, because we kind of threw in stuff. We talked about Frozen 2, $1.3 billion, yep. And still going strong.
It is the highest grossing animated film ever.
Yep. If you don't count The Lion King as
truth,
an animated film. Well, the new Lion King, I should say.
Right.
Which everybody but Disney considers an animated film at this point, basically. But yeah, so Jumanji, the next level was $26.2 million. It's holding up really well.
Yeah,
okay,
like,
that was only
not bad.
Yeah, it was only a 25.5% drop. The movie right now worldwide, $611 million, almost $612 million. You know, I mean, the last one, which really just kind of overperformed, did $962 million. So this one isn't going to do that, but it didn't have to.
No.
You know, I mean, considering the fact that it's technically the third movie in this series and you know, a sequel.
I mean, like, who'd have thought?
Sure. Really. Yeah.
You know, but cool.
Yeah. And, you know, other couple notes, Knives Out. Ryan Johnson's new film, almost $250 million worldwide. That's holding up very, very well. That's a very big success. So good for him. Good for them. They just announced that he's going to be working on a sequel to that.
Oh, cool.
So that's exciting. And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it when it comes to the box office.
Wait, somebody wants a sequel from Rian Johnson?
Yeah, right.
Oh, everyone's like, good, keep him away from Star Wars. And I'm like, find a spike and sit on it.
Yeah, I know. yeah.
Sorry, guys.
The guy makes good movies. I don't know what to tell everybody. And, you know, I guess congratulations to Joaquin Phoenix on winning the Golden Globe for Best Actor in Drama for Joker.
Awkward as hell with the speech.
Well, that's him, yeah.
That is, yeah. I was like, is he channeling his inner Arthur at the moment?
As I stand here and actually look at the... So I don't buy a lot of physical, like, media anymore, like DVDs, Blu-rays, even though I have a massive collection. But the last year or so, I've kind of really cut back. I've gone mostly digital.
Same.
But I am staring at, it actually just came today, my 4K copy of Joker, because I get everything Batman related in hard copy.
All right.
It's just one of those things, and this counts. So
I do the same thing with Star Wars stuff.
Yeah, too. Well, I do the same thing with Star Wars too, and I will continue with Star Wars. But Star Wars, Batman, and Doctor Who, and Star Trek are pretty much those things I will continue to buy physical media for, just as a collector.
Yes.
Even if I never open it, or I open it just to get the digital code, and then I keep it back on the shelf. But yeah.
And for the record, Joker 1-2. Golden Globes.
Yes, it did. And I'm almost more excited about the other one, because that was even just as deserved, if not more so, for that
score.
Yeah, I love it.
Which is very interesting, because typically a composer will score to a rough cut of the film. And that wasn't the case with Joker. She is, I think that's, it's a she.
Yes.
She from Sweden, Norway, something like that. I don't remember. I think she's like Eastern European or something. She was sent just the script.
That's and startling.
That's crazy. And scored music that was totally representative of the character Arthur and his journey through the film as he transforms into Joker. So phenomenal. Phenomenal artistic nature in that woman.
She's Icelandic.
Okay, Icelandic.
Yeah.
I was close.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So, interesting bit there.
Yeah, very... definitely well-deserved, I feel.
Yeah.
So, let's quickly just get into some of the couple of things that news bits today, right? So, The CW announced that they've renewed pretty much everything.
Yeah, there's like no cancellations whatsoever.
The network renewed 13 series for the 2020-2021 season, all but one of its scripted shows that haven't announced an end date in the current season. Arrow, Supernatural, and The 100 are bowing out this year or next year, whatever. 2020. Right. So returning next season will be first year shows Batwoman and Nancy Drew, along with veterans All-American, Black Lightning, Charmed, Dynasty, The Flash, In the Dark, Legacies, Legends of Tomorrow, Riverdale, Roswell, New Mexico, and Supergirl. I mean, the only series, unfortunately, not to receive a formal pickup is Riverdale spinoff Katie Keene, which premieres in February, but they have ordered 13 additional scripts, and they're putting it on the path towards renewal. So it's possible they'll renew every show.
Wow.
Basically.
That's cool. And they've got some new shows coming, right? Like the reboot of Walker, Texas Ranger. Is that right?
Is that a thing?
Yeah, with Jared Padalecki.
Huh.
Supernatural.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Walker, Texas Ranger. I mean, that show is just so Chuck Norris. Why do it? Like, why not just come up with a different concept?
How do you do it?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, you could do it, but why? Yeah, look at that. Walker, Texas Ranger reboot starring Jared Padalecki in the works.
Yep.
Oh, boy.
Doesn't that get people excited?
Yeah, no. Supernatural is actually an underrated series.
It's been on forever.
Yes, it has. But I don't know that's... whatever. I mean, you just... I don't know.
No words.
No.
No words.
Well, I have words, but I'll save them.
Let's keep it positive today.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that came out was the fact that the new Mutants trailer finally dropped after, if anybody remembered that the movie was still actually coming out.
Totally forgot.
And it's coming out April 3rd of this year. And it's a trailer. It's, it didn't blow me away. It didn't get me excited to see the movie. It didn't look terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of, I don't know. It doesn't really tell you a, like a ton. Gives you a little bit of an idea.
Getting a release.
I am stunned it's getting a release.
I'm like, why didn't they just move it to Hulu?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's not...
Although, I mean, at this point, though, you're Disney. I mean, yeah, it's the 20th Century Fox thing, but it's Disney.
I just What's don't the difference? Understand what this what it is. And I like the concept that it is taking something we are super familiar with already.
Yep.
With the idea of mutants and making it into some horror type. Like, yes. In concept, it sounds interesting.
It clearly looks like kind of almost like a gothic horror.
So, yeah, like yeah. It has the I don't know if anyone's caught The Haunting of Hill House Netflix, which is amazing, but it has that kind of vibe to it where it's like lots of, you know, muted greens and dark color, you know what I mean? It's just got that weird vibe to it, and there's some interesting choices.
Right.
I don't know how to describe it. I'm not compelled to care about any of these characters.
So now here's something interesting about this movie, or I think interesting anyway. Now Dark Phoenix, we know, tanked, right? So clearly the X-Men brand is not super strong right now.
Super strong.
But do, well, because I think it could be very easily right. Again, but.
Yes.
Yeah.
He just said super strong. Sorry.
Yeah. Do you think, though, that because of the fact that most people don't know the history of this movie, right? Do you think people almost treat this as like, oh, look, they're doing something new with these characters, the X-Men, you know, maybe we'll check it out? Or do you think that this just is DOA?
So this is one of those situations where I kind of wish I didn't know how the sausage was made. And right. I kind of wish I could remove myself from understanding some of the issues that have happened with this film. I have to ask somebody, what, you know, someone who's not in this realm and in, within this sphere of like understanding all of that stuff that we consume on a regular basis, what they think of this. I don't know. I almost wish they rebranded it, not even the New Mutants. Like they had changed the name of the movie to kind of like to be something different, maybe. And the thing is, like, X-Men isn't even related to any of this, really, because, you know, obviously that's a brand and that's not popping up. Like, it's not like X-Men's New Mutants or any, you know what right. I'm saying? It's just the New Mutants. So I don't know if people are going to think right away when they hear the word mutant that this has anything to do with mutants from X-Men.
Well, I guess that's kind of what I was saying. Well, so like, you know, you just said like you wish you could, you didn't know how the sausage is made, but most people don't, right? So
yeah, so I'd be, do you think those people might are like Toxic Avengers? Like, I don't, you know.
Yeah, do you? I'm just curious.
Are the turtles coming next?
Yeah, if people treat this as like, oh, this is that, you know, like just another one of these X-Men movies that I don't really care about anymore. Or do people just look at this as something new and fresh and say, hey, that looks exciting. I don't know what the answer is going to be, but
I would say no, because if I were like a lay person who knew nothing about this stuff, here's two things. One, the Marvel logo. That would tell it, right? That would be like, oh, it's a Marvel, like mutants, Marvel. Okay, here we go. It's got to do something with the X-Men. And if I didn't pick that up, then I would have Googled it. And I would be right. Like, oh, all right, that's a little weird.
So now do you think people just say, oh, I'm kind of done with that because
yes.
I didn't like the lab? Or do people say like, oh, well, maybe this is like a, you know, something different.
And I was interested, you know, for me, it wasn't even the trailer that interested me. It was how it was being positioned. Like, because typically, and Sony's doing this a lot, they'll go in association with Marvel. And this was just a traditional Marvel, sort of traditional Marvel logo. And so,
yeah,
if by association, it's like, oh, is this part of the MCU? And so Disney's move here is to fool people to think this has something to do with the MCU.
Yeah, well, if I could be mistaken, but I believe the Marvel logo actually flashes before the 20th Century Fox logo.
No.
No?
I think it's 20th Century Fox and then the Marvel.
Is it? Okay, because I was going to say, because then the whole thing would be like, you know, then the in association with thing would come into play, but...
Yeah, but that's not even, like I said, it's not even there. It's like 20th Century Fox logo, then the Marvel comic flip. So, right. And I don't know if people pick up on the Marvel Studios logo versus just Marvel.
I don't think they, I don't think the average think person do. Does, no.
You yeah. know what I'm saying? So, like, I wonder if that's the move. It's like, hey, you know, we're going to give you a Marvel, a quote unquote Marvel film while you wait for the next one to come out, right? Which is Black Widow.
Right.
And so I wonder if it's going to trick people and they're like, hey, you bought into Thor Ragnarok. You know, maybe you're going to think this is a really cool concept and they get into it.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, clearly the Marvel name is brand is strong, so you're sure. going to use that. Why wouldn't you? Yeah, I don't know. I'm just interested to see what.
And it's got Maisie Williams, so maybe that'll do something, and the kid from Stranger Things, yeah. and that'll do something, and the girl from Glass.
I mean, it's do something. The question is, what happens if? I don't expect this to become like a huge success, but what happens if it winds up kind of overperforming?
Then Marvel takes its, I mean, Disney takes its money and runs.
And that's it. We just never see it again. It. Okay.
I think that's it. Yeah. I think this movie's already in the red. And so whatever money they're going to make, they'll be like, great. We've got to get something back on this, right. 20th Century Fox acquisition.
Yeah.
Because I think the vast majority, and I think Terminator Dark Fate was one of these, because I think it was a 20th Century Fox film. I mean, these movies are tanking. And so Disney has to recoup that. It's their loss. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're recouping just from the purchase anyway. I don't think it. Well, yeah, no. There was a ton of studios involved in Terminator.
Back the marketing.
Yeah.
Back all that stuff.
Terminator was actually distributed by Paramount Pictures in North America and 20th Century Fox internationally. But it was Paramount, Skydance, 20th Century Fox, and like a whole bunch of other places.
Yeah,
were involved in the production of that deal.
Right. Yeah.
That movie made $261 million on a budget of almost $200 million. That's a disaster.
Wow.
That, folks, is a failure.
Yes.
That's
an epic failure.
Yeah. You want to look at what a real box office failure is. There you go.
You know, you got Tim Miller. Sorry. Yeah. What does that do to your career, buddy?
Doesn't help, that's for sure.
No. Nope.
I mean,
no,
he can rebound easy, but it certainly doesn't help.
Right.
Yeah. Right. All right, so let's get into the thing that we have yet to be able to talk about. So we haven't even really talked about it, like, individually, like, aside from this podcast, because we both watched the first episode of Watchmen when it aired, but I did not follow up on it just because of life. You kept with it, and the whole time you were like, dude, are you watching it yet? Are you watching it yet? Are you watching? I'm like, no, I didn't get a chance yet. No. So finally, I kept hearing so many amazing things after the finale that I was like, all right, I have to, over the my Christmas like vacation, I have to watch this. So my plan was to watch the show. It's 9 episodes, right?
8, 9?
Yeah. My plan was to watch it like over the course of like a week and a half. And I wound up watching it in 2 days because I thought it was absolutely fantastic.
And I'm glad you got to binge it.
Yeah, I am too, actually. I'm actually happier that I got to binge it as opposed to have watched it week to week, because as many of you know who listen to this, I am not a fan of Damon Lindelof, and I did not have a lot of faith in him with this show. And I know a couple of times you had texted me and you were like, man, I don't know. He's leaving a lot of stuff.
Oh, dude, I was...
And I was like...
Suspect.
Yeah, and I was like, well, that's Damon Lindelof.
And here's the thing. Like, I'm not even like that about him until you were like, oh, do you remember Prometheus? And I was like, yep. And you're like, Damon Lindelof. I'm like, that's a problem.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
That's a big old problem.
Yep.
Yeah, so there was a lot, because I was texting you and I was texting Phil, and I'm like, dude, these mystery sandwiches, every episode, it's like, where's the payoff?
Yep.
Where is the payoff? And holy shit, the last two episodes is where you get that.
Yeah, you do, and I think had I not binged it, I would have... I don't know that I would have given up on the show, but I would have gotten very frustrated. But binging it, not having a chance to think too much about it, and knowing that I was going to get to see it through the end, like at my own pace, and that it I kind of had a feeling it delivered, because I know people were raving about the show. So all of that factored in, I think, added to my enjoyment of it. But man, what an achievement this show was.
Yeah.
If you take a look, and I will apologize to Damon Lindelof. Not because he's still Lost is still a thing, so for that, but at least what he did with this, and I, you know, I became so fascinated with the show, I wound up reading a lot of articles about it after the fact. And I didn't realize, like, Damon Lindelof was very much against doing this show because he reveres Watchmen, you know, the original book. And everyone knows Alan Moore, who's miserable. He just doesn't want, you know, Hollywood at all to be involved in anything that he does. Or has done. So he doesn't endorse any of it or whatever. And Damon Lindelof actually wanted, you know, wrote Alan Moore to get his blessing on this. And of course he didn't get it, but.
And
he,
Alan Moore took a bag of shit and sent it back.
Yes, he did. And, and anyway, so Damon Lindelof though figured, well, they're going to make this show anyway. So he just kind of felt like he wanted to take it upon himself to do it. And man, what he accomplished here was he made a sequel, sort of. He calls it a remix, but it, and I get what he means by that. But this is a sequel that also manages to tell a very similar story in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
To the original, you know, book, but in modern times with modern social issues, and capturing all, to me, all of the feel of what Watchmen was and is. It's one of the more remarkable kind of sequels / retelling, reinventions, whatever, I've ever seen. Because you could sit here and watch this knowing nothing of the original story and still be completely engrossed in it and what it is.
I bet the hell that if after watching that show, you'd pick up that graphic novel.
You may, yeah. And that, you know, Watchmen is very much a product of its time, you know, you know, Cold War, you know, 80s United States. And so some of that can get lost, I think, a little bit, maybe on people who, you know, were not, didn't grow up around that. But still, it's a powerful work. And it's just, man, I could not believe what I was watching, and that I could not believe how Watchmen this is without actually being the, you know, like a note for note retelling of Watchmen.
Yeah. It's a great original story.
Yeah.
And the characters are phenomenal.
Yep.
Acting is phenomenal.
Yes, it is. The music, tremendous.
The music is next level.
And that's how, you know, that's another thing. Like, you know, when you read Watchmen, the musical notes in that, you know, and the callbacks and stuff like that are a part of it. Well, he managed to even capture that, how the music becomes part of the narrative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's you know, the portrayals of the older versions of these characters that you're familiar with resonate, and they're so deep and so interesting. I mean, you know, and it's littered with clues and Easter eggs and things like that. It is like every, you know, comic book lover's dream to see this show come to life. And, you know, it does a great job with flashbacks. Like, the flashback episode was like, I've never seen anything done like that before.
Yes.
You know, it's visually stunning and engaging. It just sucks you right in. And, you know, I think that was the thing that was like, starting to irk me a bit. And I'm like, I keep on getting sucked into this show with a new thing that you're like dangling in front of me, you know, some new, oh, you know, this character is that. And did you know about this? And I'm like, holy cow. Like, dude, you better give it to me at the end. Cause if you end up leaving me hanging, I'm going to be so mad. And what I love most about the show is that it is a open shut book. That is it. I don't want a season two. This story was great. It was tight. You know, I don't care about who Lube guy is, but I know who he is. you know, I thought it did I don't know. I'm surprised it didn't win any awards, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it really is, and I agree. I don't need a second season because I don't know. You know, this was telling a very specific story.
Yeah.
And it told its story.
Right.
You know, I even love how it had like the story within a story, kind of like the stuff that was going on
about
with
Hooded Justice.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, that was cool, but I mean, like the Adrian stuff, like the Ozymandias stuff.
That was awesome stuff, man.
I mean, it does wind up connecting.
Yeah, kind of, but like new timeline stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is always fun.
Yeah.
When you get it right.
Yes. And he doesn't always get that right, as you can tell with Lost, but he got it right here.
And it was awesome. It's perfect.
Yeah.
And, you know, you love to hate the guy. And you're like, and that was the thing. I mean, Adrian's storyline was confusing the shit out of me.
Right.
And I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And then Easter eggs.
Yes.
Someone's like, did you see the candles? I'm like, what? And they're like, look at the candles. I'm like, okay. So every time he has a cake, we're celebrating a new year for him.
Yep.
In this place. Oh my God, it's so good.
Yeah.
and his brain. And seeing how that works, you know what I mean? We don't really get a sense of how manipulative he is in the comic books.
Right.
Or in the graphic novel, I'm sorry. It comes in flashes, and this is a person who is too smart for his own good, super diabolical, because he wants to be a savior. He really, really wants to be a Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And... You get a lot of that, and he was by far one of my favorite characters. He was amazing.
Yeah, it is a really great show. It's one that I will find myself watching again.
The Dr. Manhattan reveal.
Yeah,
that was great.
Yes, it was. It was, that whole episode, like that whole sequence, it's so plausible too.
Yeah,
you know, like of how that would happen, and yeah,
dude, and the timeline things that happen in that episode.
Yeah,
he's revealed.
Yeah, yeah,
is that like the right man? I like was shaking because it was so well written.
Yeah,
and it was stitched beautifully together. Beautiful blanket.
Yeah, it was. And there was a lot of things there. So, like, again, that could have gone really south.
Yeah.
But they kept it tight. And I think a big part of that is because of the fact that it was written as one story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where things start to get crazy is when you don't have a plan, which was like the Lost issue. Like, they didn't have clearly didn't have a full plan. They had a general idea. But by having to, you know, go more and more seasons, you have to start expanding on stuff and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And that's where you start to get crazy with that stuff. Cause that stuff has to be very intricately planned out to connect properly. And, you know, for one season you can do that. But if you have to string all of that along over the course and you're bringing in new characters and you have to connect them. And so then it starts to get much harder. to connect. Yeah. So, you know, I know that they mentioned that they would like to do a season two, but he has said that he doesn't think he would do it.
I hope he doesn't.
So and if they do I hope do he one,
turns the money down.
Yeah, and if they do one without him, is that something you would watch though? Because would you be worried that it's they're just doing it to do it? Because it was very highly rated, viewed, whatever.
So it's kind of like True Detective,
right?
Where what's his name, Cary Fukugawa, crushed it in season one, and then they got somebody else to do season two, and it just didn't feel the same. Yeah. Like, so no, leave it. I'd say leave it alone.
Now, what if he does agree to come back to do it?
Then I'm going to be worried again. I'm going to be like, oh man, can you actually outdo yourself with this? Because I'll be honest, I mean, nobody, I don't know if anyone saw where this story was going. And that was the beauty of it all. So, yeah. You know, I think now the expectations are going to be set. So it's almost like, can he compete with himself?
Yeah.
And I think that's the toughest piece.
Yeah. And, you know, the shame of it all, too, is I actually think that if, and maybe he has watched it, just won't admit to it, but like, I think Alan Moore would actually be proud of this.
Yeah.
You know, because I just feel like it, I mean, I can't put words in his mouth, clearly, but like...
What was it, David Gibbons?
Well, he's been more open to... You know, like, yeah. He allowed his name to be used when, you know, for Zack Snyder's version. You know, his mm-hmm. movie. You know, he's been more open to it.
Which is also good.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. He's more open to that stuff. You know, it's really Alan Moore. I mean, he's got his whole issues go back to the fact that, you know, he feels that DC really stole Watchmen from him. But he was young, you know, when he wrote it for them. But you know what? Like, he was a young creator who was working for a corporation. And I know he's very anti-corporation now, but it's like you worked for a corporation.
Dude, speak to all of the comic greats, man. They yeah. all feel the same way.
Yeah. And I mean, I know to be fair, Hollywood has not, you know, I mean, V for Vendetta is polarizing. There's some people that really like it, some people that don't.
I love
it. I know you do. But like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was a disaster.
That's horrible.
You know, I like a lot. I like Zack Snyder's Watchmen a lot. You know, I know that there are some people that don't and don't feel like it. I felt like it was as faithful as it could be. Some people didn't feel like it captured the spirit of it at all. I
think that's total horseshit.
I agree. But whatever. But he also has issues with how he feels like his stuff has been treated, like, by Hollywood, whatever. But look, he's a unique character, whatever. But I just feel like this show captured so much of the feel of what that was trying to do, which is capture paranoia and fears and societal issues that are current. And, you know, and do it in a way that you could address it in a parallel universe. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, or a parallel timeline. So you could really kind of dig into it.
So, I mean, like in that sense, I would say that this show, this, you know, season is probably more in line with what he was trying to achieve in his book.
Yes.
than Zack Snyder's Watchmen, because while it is a faithfully adapted film, that sentiment is there, but I don't think it's as strong as it is in the show. Because when you start playing with race,
well, but that's what I mean. So, and it's not, I mean, it's a difficult comparison, because what Zack Snyder was doing was he was making a movie about Watchmen. He was making a movie adaptation of Watchmen, sure, of that sure. story, right? That specific story. Mm-hmm. What Damon Lindelof did with this show was he made a movie inspired by a TV show inspired by Watchmen.
Mm-hmm.
Inspired by the themes of Watchmen, carrying on the themes of Watchmen, and had the feel and almost the narrative structure of Watchmen, but just told a new story with it. And interesting, but also,
so good.
Also, because it's a sequel, you know, tying in the events of the original story
mm-hmm.
into this story. and also expanding on some of that and taking it into new directions,
yeah,
like the Hood of Justice stuff.
That shit was brilliant.
Yeah, so like that stuff is, that's what makes this so fascinating. It's such a, I think, an amazing, you know, homage, new telling, retelling, sequel, whatever, of this story. It's about as well done as you could possibly do.
And a squid apparently works.
Yes. Yes.
Who would have known?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So if you haven't checked out Watchmen yet, I just highly recommend it. And I will give Damon Lindelof a pass now. I won't automatically write him off, which I've done for the longest time. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Before we get out of here, though, you had some like Hulk stuff you wanted to talk about, right?
Yeah. So apparently it's rumored that, you know, I think, so before I even get into the news, a lot of folks are like, well, not folks that listen to our show, but there have been folks out there that have wondered what is going on with the Hulk. Why hasn't he had a solo film in a while? Well, apparently the licensing agreement between Marvel Studios and Universal is that they can use the Hulk in different instances, and that would be with team-ups, and that's why we haven't necessarily had a solo Hulk film after The Incredible Hulk, which followed Iron Man in 2008. So there's been some rumors that apparently Marvel has reacquired the rights to the Hulk, and that was also inclusive of Namor, the aquatic dude, for those who don't know. The other aquatic guy that looks like Spock. So I'm interested to see if that's true or not. I mean, I've seen a couple of sites pick it up. It's a rumor at the moment. So what do you guys think? Are you guys excited about it? Chris, what do you think about that? I don't think we need another Incredible Hulk or Hulk movie. But I would like to see Namor. I think Namor would be
You want a Submariner movie?
Yeah. I mean, he was part of the original Avengers.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the Hulk at this point is better suited for television than the movies. I mean, he could be used in the movies the way they've used him for the most part.
He's apparently going to pop up.
Yeah, but and maybe it's because I grew up watching, you know, the Incredible Hulk television show with Bill Bixby, but I think that is, now visuals aside, I think that version, like, that is one of the best, most relatable ways to kind of tell the Hulk story to people, because, you know, they basically combined like The Fugitive and the Hulk, essentially, is what that show was.
Yeah.
And I thought that it was a really great way to do that. So I would prefer maybe like a Disney Plus show for the Hulk, you know, like a limited run thing where like he's dealing with having to be the Hulk, and doesn't have to necessarily be like where he goes from town to town, you know, things like that. But like, I think I would prefer that than a movie. As far as like Namor, Submariner, or whatever, I don't know. I mean, I guess it could be cool.
When they were getting the Eternals and Guardians of the Galaxy, it could work. Who knows?
Well, no, I mean, I'm not saying, yeah. I mean, it clearly could work and be great. I mean, look, there was talk of him being included in Black Panther 2. So who knows? Maybe that'll be a thing.
Right.
I think, you know, you introduce him in a movie like that, which you would assume a lot of people are going to go see.
And people think he's like an Easter egg in Endgame, where they talk about some sort of seismic activity in the ocean.
Yeah, maybe.
Sure.
Okay, sure. Yeah. I don't know. But I think that, I mean, look, we have Aquaman.
Yeah.
It's a similar deal, kind of. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, sure. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that on January 7th, 2020, that I'm like, yes, I cannot wait for that Namor film. But I mean, that doesn't mean that I won't be excited for it if it looks cool and it does happen and it's whatever. But I, you know, it's just never been one of my favorite, like, all-time favorite characters. I was never really a big Marvel guy. Like I've said, I was a DC guy. So for me, like when you start getting into those characters, like I knew Sub-Mariner from like Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. You know what I mean? When you start to get like deep into those characters, like I'm not going to pretend like I have this affection for them. Because I don't. But I, you know, look, I didn't know anything about the Guardians of the Galaxy before that happened. And that's one of, you know, those are two of my favorite movies in the MCU. So,
yeah. You know. Speaking of DC, the Batman is apparently in production.
It is in production. Yeah.
Yeah. So very excited to see that. I hope they release a still of Robert Pattinson in the suit.
I do too. And I, you know, I know I was. You know, we follow Batman on film, you know, on I follow him on Facebook and on Twitter, and you know they're big on, you know, not posting the set, the leaked set photos and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So
I agree with them.
I agree that, you know what, let's look, you know, now if he has the suit and he's, you're going to get ready to start filming stuff with him in the suit, why not release it? Like, just get ahead of it.
Just do your promotional still.
Yeah, just get ahead of it, because there's no downside to doing that. And you're
they
not going to be
Affleck, right? They got ahead of Affleck.
Yeah, well, Snyder, yeah, released that awesome picture, which got, you know, everybody buzzing. There's no downside to doing it. You know, the downside is going to be because, you know, people are going to lose their minds. And I guess ultimately it doesn't really matter because, you know, people are going to still go see the movie anyway. And they will eventually release a, you know, a studio shot, whether, you know, you get stills, leaked stills first, you know, as soon as the official picture comes out. I mean, that's what people are going to be talking about. Right.
Right. Right.
But
no, you're going to get like that. Just Jared.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it would be nice if at this stills. Point, maybe give us some official stuff just to control the narrative, maybe a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean...
Or look, even of the villains and stuff like that.
Sure. Yeah, whatever you have.
I've seen people trying... Like, I've avoided this thing like the plague, but like...
I have too.
I think they had images of Colin Farrell.
Oh, did they?
I confirmed, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, the only thing I saw was... I saw somebody put up pictures of like a news truck and a police car. And I was like, all right, well, whatever. I mean, that tells me nothing. Yeah. So fine. It doesn't give me an idea of like the visual style or anything. So I don't really care about that, but I don't really want to necessarily see a leaked, you know, thing of the suit. I want to actually see the official thing first.
Yeah. Same. Cool.
Yeah. And I'm sure that'll be coming very soon.
Yeah.
I don't know what the holdup would be, but yeah, can't imagine that. Even if it's a little thing, like, you know what Snyder did. So what Snyder did with the first, you know, Affleck thing was, you know, it was kind of shadowy and dark,
black and white.
It didn't have a lot of detail, and you could kind of see. So it's like, even give us something like that that still can, you know. You didn't know exactly what the colors exactly were going to be and all that stuff.
Right,
so,
right.
It's like, give us, even if you give us something that's like, you know, just to, you know, it's official, but it's like still maybe even keeps you guessing a little bit. Like, I'd be cool with that too.
It gets people so excited, man.
Right, because most people are not, again, and we say this all the time, but like the average person, most people are not going to see these leaked studio things or even care much about them or know what they are or know what to do with them. So I don't really think it's that big a deal. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's like the Spider-Man stuff. Remember when Spider-Man Far From Home, all those things leaked out and they're like, well, what suit is that? And what suit is this?
Yeah.
And look, he's got the black suit. And oh, he's got, it turned out to, you know, obviously we know what all of that turned out to be.
Right.
Yeah. My days of like losing my mind over like that type of stuff, or those days are definitely over.
I just avoid it, man. I did it with Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah. Yeah, I did it too.
As much as
I
would have loved to have gotten myself, you know, worked up over that shit. I mean, there were apparently leaked images of like the Ben and Rey thing.
Oh, really? I missed all that. So, thankfully.
And I just I had heard about it, but I quickly pushed it to the back of my mind. So that even when I saw it, I was like, okay, I was surprised. But yeah. And then I saw the image like after and I was like, oh God, thank God I missed that.
Yeah, I'm happy I missed. I didn't even realize that this was a thing that leaked, but yeah.
I'd have been more pissed. Because one of the things I actually liked would have been spoiled for me.
There you go.
Anyways.
All right.
So
that'll be
let's wrap it up.
Yeah. So, of course, we definitely want you to join in on the conversation. There's, you know, some stuff to discuss. If you want to hit us up, talk to us about Watchmen, because we really haven't gotten much of a chance to talk about that. Go for it. You can do that at thefanboygarage.com, of course, where you can go to our merch store and get one of our I'm Cool I Podcast t-shirts or mugs or magnets or pins or whatever. You could also send us an email there if you're not on the social medias. And if you are on the social medias, of course, you can hit us up on Twitter at The Fanboy Garage and also on Facebook and Instagram, Fanboy Garage as well. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at RealCLMighty.
And you can find me at a new Twitter handle, and that is AARonSpeaks. So that is A_A_RonSpeaks on Twitter.
Oh, yeah? So you...
Yeah, I changed it.
You did the...
I was like, let me change things up a little bit. So it's AARonSpeaks.
So you're back to the AARon.
AARon. Yeah. And one other thing, we're going to be getting a YouTube page up and running where you can also listen to previous episodes, and then maybe Chris and I will get to see our pretty faces on a video. Our boys at Batman on Film do such a good job with their vlogs. It's inspired us to try it out as well. So you'll be seeing and hearing more of that soon. But if you do like what you listen to now and what you hear and what you interact with, please do leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you are listening to our show. And we will catch you all on the next one. Thanks for listening.